Today's guest is Markus Kuntosch in Germany, and I am incredibly excited about this episode because we get to talk about two fascinating topics: using colors to support our homeopathic prescribing, as well as how to identify and use bird remedies in our clinic. So Markus is the author of Free as a Bird, which you can purchase through Narayana Verlag, and he has been working very closely with Ulrich Walter, the author of Colors in Homeopathy. Now, the two of them have been working together since 1999, and they work very closely and also do several provings together as well. Now, if you're interested in using the colors for yourself in your clinical practice, then you can visit www.homeo.de. That's homeo.de. Now, this is just to give you a little taster of how you can use the colors in your practice. And once you're ready to get a bit more serious about using this, I really recommend purchasing Ulrich Walter's book, Colors in Homeopathy, so that you can have the true color chart and the accompanying remedies. The color resolution will vary quite a lot from monitor to monitor. So if you are serious about using the colors in your practice, definitely get this book through Narayana Verlag. It is called Colors in Homeopathy. I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we have a very special guest, our first homeopath from Germany, the lovely Markus Kuntosch. Welcome to the show, Markus.
Hello. Welcome to you all. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. I should say guten Tag.
Guten Tag to Australia, down under.
Yeah, well, you know, our listenership is all over the world now. Actually, our top listenership is in America now, and second is the UK. Sometimes Australia bumps UK off the list, and right up there, we had Brazil up there the other day as well. It's some, and Ireland, New Zealand, it moves around a little bit. So we're all over. Markus, I have been trying to get you on the podcast for ages, and I'm so excited to have you. But before we get into the work that you're doing, can you tell us a little bit about how you were first introduced to homeopathy?
Yeah, when I look back, it was in my early 20s. Before I went to university, I think I had decided to become a physician. And my father at that time, he was selling prefabricated wood houses. And he had a client who was a homeopath. And he helped me with some minor problems and sketched my interest. And he gave me the first book. And I was intrigued about how you see the humans and how you treat them. Then I bought the Organon of Hahnemann. So I started real from the basic right from the beginning. And I read it. And I think in 1 week, I've read the whole book. And then I bought Ken's lectures on the Organon. And that was how it started. And we were sent to university. We were not able to choose where we study. So at first I was a bit disappointed because the town, I didn't know it was Mainz. It's near Frankfurt. But actually I was very fortunate because there was a very active student group where we met each week to talk about acupuncture, homeopathy, healthy nutrition. And there were two groups, one advanced group, which introduced the others into homeopathy. So from the very beginning of my medical studies, I even started teaching homeopathy in my early 20s. And we invited doctors, we went to congresses. And so the whole time during my studies, I studied university medicine and also homeopathy even helped me to survive this more theoretical studies at university, because we were right from the beginning into practice treating our friends and neighbors. And so it was special time.
That's really, really cool. And I think when it comes to natural medicine in Germany, I think most people are actually like quite open-minded. We've had four German au pairs over the years, all like young girls. And it always amazed me when they came over, all four of them, funny enough, were vegan, and they were, none of them were on Facebook. And they were all really into just natural ways of being. It was just as if it was ingrained in their culture. And it was just so different to any 19-year-olds over here. And this I'm talking about 6 years ago now. So, you know, obviously you were at university a long time before that. But do you feel people there are quite open-minded to natural medicine? And can you find homeopathy on most of the street corners? Do people mostly know about homeopathy in Germany, seeing as that's where it was born?
The thing is that the people, the families, the patients, they want it really dearly. But the officials, it's now really under pressure. Mm-hmm. And though it's homeopathy is the native land of homeopathy. Yeah, it was founded by Hahnemann 200 years ago. And it's our colleagues from the organizations, they have banned it now. So you can't become a homeopathic doctor in most of the countries in between Germany. So it's very sad times at the moment. But the people, the patients, they dearly want it. And they appreciate that you offer the normal medicine together with homeopathy. So I think it had both its rights, should come together.
That's really interesting. Like I said, you're the first German homeopath that I've had on the show, and I try to get homeopaths from all around the world so we can get a bit of a picture of what homeopathy is like in that particular country. So are you saying that homeopathy is actually not thriving as much in the land where it was born?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really interesting. And do you have to be a medical doctor to practice homeopathy in Germany?
Or? No. The development is a bit like a wave, yeah? We were up in the 90s, but now it's at the moment it's a bit of a downfall, like after the Second World War. And it was the lay homeopaths, yeah, who kept homeopathy alive after the World War. And I think it may be the same in this time now. Yeah? It's all about the money. Yeah? They don't want that homeopathy is paid by the official insurances. And so they want to. They even forbid to become a homeopathic doctor in most of the area and all in Saxony. And you can't become a homeopathic doctor. You study medicine and then you do an extra course for homeopathy. But this is not possible anymore at the moment in most of the federal states.
That's very interesting. I wasn't expecting that at all. And is it easy enough to get access to homeopathic medicines? Can you buy it in most of the pharmacies there?
Yeah, you can buy it in all the pharmacies. Yeah.
And you can't claim from your private health insurance for homeopathy?
The privates, they mostly pay it. Only a few of the non-privates pay the homeopathic treatment. So the patients had to pay a lot for themselves. So it's very cheap. Yeah? You save a lot of money when you work like this. Yeah. I would say we save about 100,000 euros each year from the way we are working, yeah, with not prescribing all these allopathic medicines. So actually, it's a cheap way of treatment. And that's why it's so famous in India or in Brazil or all around the world. Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about your relationship with Ulrich Walter as well? Because you two work together very closely, and it's from what I could research, it sounds like you've been working together for more than 20 years.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but how did you meet?
Well, it's actually searched a clinic where I can practice normal medicine and finish my education to become a GP, general practitioner. And I was searching for a place where I can practice naturopathy and homeopathy. And through that way, I came to Kandern. Yeah. And Ulrich, he knew Dr. Müller, yeah, who discovered the connection of the homeopathic remedies and the colors.
Oh.
And from that on, we were working together. And I was part of the process of all the books he wrote, from the handwritings, the Silver Series. And it's a daily exchange. Nearly each day, we go through all the interesting cases and really great experience.
That's incredible. Can you maybe, because just for our listeners, what we're going to be talking about today is using colors in our homeopathic prescribing. And we're going to have this on YouTube as well and on Rumble, because Marcus is going to be sharing his screen with us shortly. And just so you get a working example of this, I've had the colors and homeopathy books on my desk for many years. And I've actually only used them a couple of times, kind of half-heartedly, because I wasn't confident in using it. And that was part of my reason for wanting to get you on today, because I intuitively know that this can really be a wonderful tool in clinic. So I just need you to come on today and tell me a bit about it. So can you maybe tell our listeners a little bit about how this using color preference in our patients as a way to prescribe a remedy? How did this first start?
Well, it first started a very experienced colleague from Cologne in Germany. He was a pulmonologist and homeopath, Dr. Hubert Volker Müller. He was continuously searching for really deep symptoms to find good healing remedies for his patients. And one day he came over a patient with a severe depression, who always wanted to stay in the dark, shut all the lockers down and shut the light out. And there's a rubric in the repertory, shuns light, which contains conium as remedy. And the interpret is, and this patient, he liked black as his favorite color. So it's a bit strange. The color message started with the color black, which is a negotiation of all the light and the colors. And he had the intuition to ask his other conium patients, because this one was healed from this depression with conium, if they also liked black. And they did. And not only conium, also the other plant from this umbelliferae Apiaceae family, like Itosa, Cicota, they also like black. And from that home, they developed the idea that it may be right for all the other remedies. Let's find. So the whole thing is derived from cured cases, from successful prescriptions in patients. It's no theory. It's just you do an anamnesis, you ask the patient which is his favorite color. And then when it works, when you get much better or really even healed, you note it down, and when you have, let's say, 4 cases of Apis or of Formica rufa, and then you see which color do they share. For example, I just looked up Formica rufa, the red ant, and we have 4 cases, and they all have to do with hand problems. 2 had severe eczema, 1 had tingling in their hands, and the color which ran through all of them was 10C, which is a light red. So you can be sure this, you can look it up in the code, where it is. And Ulrich invented this chart with the 24 colors.
Mm-hmm.
You can see here.
Yeah.
And they go from yellow, 1, over orange, red, lilac, blue, to green, 24. Yeah? In the middle row is the row C, which is the main colors. And when you add white, you become the lighter ones. And when you add black, you become, in all, you get 120 possibilities. Together with this one, you have the white, the gray.
Ah.
So what we do is you can use the color from the age of 3 years on. Yeah? So children develop the possibility to distinguish between colors between 2 and 3 years.
Okay.
Before it's too confused. Yeah. And this matters very much. And you do a normal anamnesis, and afterwards you can ask the patient which color do they like. Mm-hmm. They can choose 1 or 2 or 3. Yeah? And you just, some even they straight away like orange, and then you can go directly to this area. Yeah? It's just to narrow it down to the right. Yeah? So maybe you can choose 4C. And then you look in the repertory, and the color repertory on the orange, the color code 4C, which are the remedies which are in there. Now, this is the orange 4C. You can see the acids, for example, phosphoric acid or sulfuric acid. You see some lax, like Leo, or some spiders. Yeah? And it's the same grading as in the, let's say, the complete or the synthesis repertory. Yeah? You have three grades.
Yeah.
And with the bold one, you have at least 2 or 3 confirmed cases with confirmed handwriting, which also looks similar. Yeah?
So have you included the handwriting in that as well?
Yeah, you use the handwriting also as a confirmation symptom.
Okay, so if that's saying bold, has that included the color confirmation and the handwriting confirmation?
Yes.
That's fascinating. And so if it's just a normal font, then it would have, say, 1 confirmed case. And if it's italics,
at least 2 cases.
Okay.
Also, I think some are also derived, which are not confirmed yet.
Okay.
When Müller started in his first book, I think there were 24 remedies with their colors. And now it's over 1,000.
Over 1,000?
Yeah, and it's free on the website, homeo.de, yeah? And we make updates every now and then. You can see the changes when you click here. Yeah, you can see the new remedies with their color, with the grade, and when we changed it.
Oh, that's amazing. So this is like, it's a work in progress. So for any of our listeners,
it's a work in progress. Yeah.
And I think
you have a case of a new remedy, yeah, which is not known before. It is a new proving, you prescribe it, your patient is cured by it. And he's, let's say he has three colors. Mm. And then you've got another patient and then his colors, and you look which colors do both of them have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you take the first remedy, which is added here, this is a mushroom we proved 2 years ago. Yeah. And the theme was breaking of your vertebral spine. Yeah. And the mushrooms had a lot of to do with actinide series, with decay, with old age. Mm-hmm. And these both were ladies at their mid 80s with spontaneous fracture of osteoporotic bones in their column. Yeah. In their lumbal. The lumbar vertebrae were broke spontaneously due to osteoporosis.
Wow.
And they have incredible severe pains. Yeah. They couldn't, the one couldn't sleep. They even took severe painkillers. Yeah. And this remedy greatly helped them both. Yeah. It was a proving symptoms, the feeling that the spinal column was broken, even by force. And I just said, these two ladies, they are just before their death, they're over 85 now. Yeah. Their bone is decaying. So let's try it. Yeah. And within a week, the one could stop all the painkillers, the other could walk again. Yeah. And both choose a color 810D.
Yeah.
And even had a similar handwriting. Mm. That's how it works, just in a nutshell. It's very, very easy in one way.
That's very cool. And I see the date of change there is the 1st of June. So it's just over a week ago that this was updated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And can you tell me about that trust column? I see some of them has one and two and some say deleted. What does that mean?
So one is just, we have just two cases now. Yeah. And deleted is, you see, dysprosium sulfuricum. Yeah. It was in 810D, which is red. But we've now more cases and we see that they all choose a darker blue.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's moved from dark red to dark blue, and that's why it is deleted. And so the trust is you get upgraded when you have more confirmations from new cases. So, for example, if you have a case and he has chosen, let's say, yellow, 1C, yeah, and you have continuing years, you may have two or three other cases which show that it's not yellow, it's more orange. Yeah. Then you will delete yellow and go to orange.
That's amazing.
So it's a constant checking. It's finding out the essence. Yeah.
And is it just from yourself and from Ulrich that this is done, or are there other homeopaths that contribute to the colors?
No, meanwhile, we get confirmations from all over the world, from Canada, from Peter Tuminello from Australia sometimes, and from colleagues from Ireland. So it's like your podcast, a real global thing now.
It's amazing.
Slowly growing. Started with a small seed, and now it's becoming a big, wonderful tree.
And when I was interviewing Peter, he did tell me that he really likes using the colors in his clinics. So that's really cool. Yeah. And it's also worth mentioning that you have some of those colors on your website on homeo.de, but obviously people's monitors can present the colors quite differently. It can look wildly differently from one monitor to another.
Exactly. I just saw it a week ago when I did a Zoom interview with a lady. And when I showed her the color charts, I saw that it was very different when I saw it on the monitor.
Mm.
So to work with it, you really need the book. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. And the book is
It doesn't matter if you have the first one with the spiral binding or the new editions, where you can show it like that with the overview of all the colors. Yeah.
I was actually wondering whether this is something that I could put up on the wall in my clinic, like as in have it there permanently. But then I was wondering, do you think it would be, maybe I'm overthinking this, do you think it would be something to have on the wall permanently? So as you're doing a consultation, a client would kind of be like looking at it and then you ask them at the end and then they've kind of had time to look at the colors. Or do you think it's better to do it spontaneous? So just open it up, say which one intuitively do you resonate with, and then close the book again.
I think both has its pros and cons. Be spontaneous is the best way. If you don't think too much, you get the best results. But I know from many colleagues, they have an extended color version as well, which is available as a poster.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you can hang it as a picture on the wall and the people can choose from that. Yeah. But maybe we can demonstrate it with you that maybe it's a
easy way. Yes, sure. I'll be happy to be a guinea pig. Do you want me to tell you my color?
Do we already know one?
No, well, I always like the teals. So I would probably, if I had to choose, I would probably go C19 or maybe even D19. Let's go D19. Yeah. I always okay. intuitively just go for the teals. Yeah.
But these two here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And what do you do if somebody can't make up their mind?
Yeah. First, just you can start in many different ways. You can start with this one. So you can ask, do you prefer more this side with the colors or more this side with the gray, black, and white tones?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just always try to narrow it down. So when they choose, for example, this side, then you can go further to this side with the gemstones.
Yeah? Oh, the gemstones.
Where on this side you have more the yellow, orange, red ones, which are more the warm colors.
Uh-huh.
And we'll decide with the blue, turquoise, and green ones, which are more the cold colors. Yeah. And let's say if you like your chase, choose this one.
Yeah.
And especially children, women like this side. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
No wonder. So, and when they've chosen the blue side, then you go to this side.
Okay.
The aim is to narrow it down to one number.
Just one number. Yeah. Get them to
But
commit.
Always be open that they can, let's say, choose two or three colors. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ask, which one do you like best?
Okay.
And if they still have difficulties, you can ask, for example, is there a color you don't like at all? Because you can use the color as a good general symptom, like a food modality.
Yeah.
It's important if they have a connection with it.
Mm. Or a complete aversion.
Oh, I like this one. I like my whole life. And you know, there's energy in it. Yeah? Because in a way, the color reflects an inner mood, an inner feeling. That makes it a very deep symptom.
Mm.
Yeah, I can tell you just a short case, because a few years ago, a farm worker from, I think he was from Pakistan, he came in and he only spoke broken English, and he was ill for about 10 days with a severe kind of flu with bursting headache. And he was just a head bursting. And he took severe painkillers, and there was not much you could bring out of him. He was a bit of a somber guy, dark, open, white, fearful eyes, just, pain, head bursting. That was all he said. But what can you do with it? Man, you can give him belladonna or a pain remedy. But the color he chose a dark blue, really dark black blue. This one here, down here, which is the darkest blue you can get. And when you look in the repertory under the rubric head pain bursting, yeah, you find belladonna, of course, but you find also capsicum. And it's the only remedy in 40 green in this rubric. Yeah. And capsicum is very similar to belladonna, with this congestion to the head, bursting pain. You have this anxious expression, high fever. And when you look in the proving, Hahnemann already described it in his proving in 1800.
Mm.
So it's a 200-year-old proving. Yeah, and this remedy helped him beautifully. And you could easily distinguish the remedies in the rubric through the colors. Yeah. So the high-graded remedies in this rubric are, I think, sepia, natrum muriaticum, belladonna, bryony, and belladonna they like light yellow, and bryonia, they like olive, and natrum muriaticum, they like turquoise. So you can easily distinguish the remedies with the color.
Interesting.
Yeah? And when you also have the handwriting, then you can look in the handwriting. There's a book from Ulrich as well, with over 700 handwriting samples for the 300 main remedies. And we have much more now here. And then you can lay the handwritings aside and you can show it maybe.
It's just such a pity. Like all my intake forms are online these days, but it's...
Look, this is, for example, the handwriting of belladonna.
Oh, yeah. Are all your intake forms still handwritten?
Your main intake forms?
Yeah.
We ask every patient to give us a writing sample.
Okay.
We give them a blank paper, and they can either write down their main complaint or a dream. And if they don't know what to write, they just can copy a text.
Okay.
We give them.
Okay.
Yeah? But unfortunately, we live in times that most of the people don't write cards or letters anymore.
Mm.
It's a pity, but because the handwriting, in a way, is the giving structure to your character. For example, the barium handwritings, they're very tiny and They have no self-esteem. Whereas lithium, a bit like manic, yeah, I can, maybe I see, can we have the...
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, there's clearly something to that, because they do have, you know, the police has been using specialists for years to check handwriting, and people do have a certain style. I don't know what it says about me that my handwriting changes all the time. It's and within the same sentence, it will change very quickly.
It's possible as well. You see this, for example, in the remedy Scandium, which is a state where they don't decide which way they should go. So you see this in the handwriting. Once it turns to the left and it's upright, and turns to the right. So you can see this trait of character in the handwriting.
That's interesting.
But we only look for the similarity. We don't analyze it like a graphologist does it.
Okay.
Well, maybe I can show you.
Oh, is that the word? Okay. Yeah. And just quick question as well, Marcus, where can people get hold of the color book and also the handwriting book? I think I ordered mine from Narayana. And they ship worldwide.
Our clinic is in the same house as the public and publishing company. Actually, the publishing of Narayana was reborn from the production of the color book.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I am.
That's very cool, because they're clearly very busy, because you can get any book there. It's such a great place. Unfortunately, during COVID, they didn't ship to Australia. And I think there was quite a few places in the world that didn't ship for a while there during COVID. So it was hard to get books from them. But so you are in the same building as them.
Yeah.
Oh, that is amazing. That would be a dream come true. I have to say, I probably just would never go do consults. I would just go sit in the publishing room and read books all day if I was there. So.
Yeah, and now it's moved to a neighbor town, but there were times when I just said go to the next room, then I can...
I'm so jealous.
Yeah, and in a way, we were very fortunate, because we had a lot of those main homeopaths from around the world as our, where we publish book from, Jans Golden, Massimo Mangialavori, Shankaran, Luke Lyon, all these, the books of Peter Tumminello.
That is really, really cool. Wow, how lucky are you to be immersed
when Ulrich wanted to publish the color book, we went to several publishing companies, but they all refused, because they thought it was too risky. Would enough people buy it? It's very expensive to produce this, because usually you have a 4-color print machine. Yep. And this is printed on 8-color, because they wanted the best and pure quality.
Yeah.
It was quite expensive, and no production company wanted to take on the risk. So finally they decided to do it themselves. And from that on, this went on, the story.
The public,
it's growing ever bigger.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. It's nice to get the little bit of a side story there as well. So can you tell us maybe a few more cases of how you've used this in your clinic? And do you use it with every single client that comes in? Do you find people's preferences change? Like the clients that you've treated over the years that you've been a practitioner, has their color preference changed over the years, or does it tend to stay quite consistent?
It is possible. Yeah? It can change, even especially in children when they grow up. Mm-hmm. You don't stay in one development stage for your whole life. But we have cases. Let's say just yesterday I talked to a woman. She was here 20 years ago, and she chose exactly the same color which she chose 20 years back. From these 100, it's sometimes really amazing. But it can change. It can, as you see, when you have a patient with a depression, they often come in dark colors, black, and when they get better, then the color comes back into them. They present more light, and that you can see also in how they close themselves. So it can change, but it's not necessarily so. And usually we ask every patient. Sometimes we forget when we are sure of the remedy. We have also cases where you can't use it because they can't decide, or they doubt it, or they think too much, had too much thoughts, how and why. Then it's the best way to get it spontaneously.
This question is just for me, because I love prescribing the butterfly remedies. Have you noticed that people who need a butterfly remedy tend to choose a particular color?
There are some, I don't know by heart, but I think we have colors. So yeah, we have the cabbage, Pyrrhus brassicae.
Yes, yeah, the
so
cabbage.
For example,
cabbage
there's also a list when you look for a remedy. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What it say is Pyrrhus brassicae. It's under P.
Oh, so you can reverse engineer it. That's great.
Yeah. There you are. Yeah? Pyrrhus brassicae.
Okay.
Yeah, it has two colors so far. It's orange, 4-5-C, and white.
Oh, that's interesting with the white because the butterfly itself is white. So that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a strong connection with the cabbage. And the other one I think we have is Inachis Io. Yeah.
Oh, Inachis Io. That's the peacock, I think.
Peacock, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful case.
Oh, 3C. I have to look that color up because I prescribed that one. Yeah,
there was one boy. I think he was in kindergarten still, about 4 years, with a severe eczema.
Mm.
And we tried several remedies, some nozodes. And the problem was that he was very clinging to his mother. And that way that he, even when he was in kindergarten, he ran away. Yeah, he was so in panic that his mother would leave him, that he was abandoned by his mother, that he didn't listen to the nurses there. He just ran away, even on a big street, so it was quite dangerous. And he was very restless. He never stood still. And at one point, what shall I do with this child? I didn't see the remedy. And I get the intuition to ask, was there any moment in his life when he was still? He was so restless and fidgety. And the mother reflected for a short, and it's, yes, there was. One day, this butterfly came and sat on his nose, you know? And that was the only time in his life where he was 5 minutes completely still. Can you imagine that? It was crazy, huh? So I thought maybe his remedy came right to him. Yeah. And I gave it and he improved. Not only his skin improved, his fear of being abandoned improved. Yeah. And the butterflies have a lot with theme of abandonedness. And
oh, that's amazing. I have used peacock butterfly. This is also a beautiful story with a little 8-year-old boy who has a pituitary tumor, and it was pressing on one of the optic nerves, which was actually causing one of his eyes to atrophy, and eventually he would have gone blind from this. So we've given him several remedies to help support him, but I was looking through which remedy to give him of the butterflies. I just had the sense that that's what he needed, and I thought, well, I'll go with peacock butterfly because of the eye on there, and he was dressing in girls' clothes and only playing with girls' toys, which there's nothing wrong with that as such, but obviously because of the pituitary gland had all sorts of endocrine causing all sorts of endocrine dysfunction in his body. Yeah, in his body. So gave him this peacock butterfly remedy, and he within a couple of weeks started playing with boys' toys, started playing with the boys at school, started dressing like a boy and just flourishing. And the craziest thing was that week, like about 3 weeks in, he was doing so good at school that the teacher gave him a prize, and the mum sent me this beautiful email, and she took a photo of him with his prize. You won't believe what the prize was, a peacock feather that the teacher gave this boy, not knowing that, because mum didn't say that he's on any homeopathic treatment at all. This was like completely.
Sometimes it's really amazing.
You can't make this up, but now you've just made me realize I'm going to give this color book to him and get him to choose a color and just see.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask you as well. So is this all just from
cure? Just a moment to this case. What happened to his tumor?
It's an ongoing process. So it's something it's going to be a journey. It's going to be a long ongoing case. I have to get back in touch with him as well. Unfortunately, he's on a lot of medications to suppress the puberty. So he's actually on one of the, a female contraceptive type drug to try and reduce the early onset of puberty. So that's working against us, but the behavioral issues and just his own self-esteem, because he was feeling really down because kids were, teasing him in school. So that has really lifted. So within himself.
It's a very, very interesting case because many of the butterflies have this gender confusion.
Yeah, exactly. And that was also one of the other reasons why I gave that to you.
It's a way how you can start with the color method, that you go to a really good case, which was teal, and then you ask the patient which color, and you would be amazed. Most of them would choose the color.
I'm going to do reverse engineer my cases that I know have been cured cases that have had excellent results, and I'm going to reverse engineer that and start writing that down. I also want to ask you, Mark.
Also to write down the main complaints, because often when they should write something, even in the first sentence, they write the central problem. It's very amazing sometimes. But you wanted to ask me something.
Yes, I want to ask you if any of the colors come from provings, because, for example, I know with a proving of leprosinum, which is the leprosy nosode, the color white was something that came out quite prominently in the proving. So would you ever just automatically go and add white under leprosinum in your listing? Or so do any of these colors come from proving symptoms, or is it always cured case and then you do the color?
The main thing is really that they come from cured cases. We know, for example, from Sarotamnus, yeah, it's Distus scobarius. It's from of the leguminosae, the white, yellow flowering plant for heart complaints. And they dream in orange. They have colorful dreams, for example. Or in the proving of ozone, yeah, the three-valued oxygen, there occurred the color black. But I would say 95% are derived from cured cases.
That's incredible. Is there anything else that you can tell the homeopaths listening to the show? Because our audience tends to be about 50% home users and 50% homeopaths. So for any homeopaths listening to this that have never heard about the possibility of using color preference in their prescribing, or maybe those that have kind of played with the idea of using it, like me, what advice can you give to homeopaths to get on board with this and just give them some confidence in using this system? And what advice would you give to them on getting started?
Well, Hahnemann already said, so when you interview a patient, try to be not prejudiced, yeah? Not judgmental, or just take it as a new possibility and work with it. Yeah, and make your own experience. When you start with, oh, I doubt this is nonsense, then it won't work out for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the best way is with every method you learn, there's not one homeopathy which is the best. Yeah. There's so many good ways you can use. And in a way, homeopathy is an art. Yeah. You need to be rational. You need to your mind, but you also need your intuition. Mm-hmm. And that way, it's really an art. Yeah. It's not mechanical work. And that's why it fascinates me, because every patient has his own unique story. You never get bored. You never are finished with learning. Even after 30 years, there come patients who have no clue at all what I should do with them. Yeah? And Jan Skolten sometimes beautifully said it. When you have no clue at all, take any clue. This could be a dream. This could be an idea. Just could it be an intuition. Yeah? And so the thing is, when you get in contact with a new method, it's best to try it out in your clinic if it works for you. Mm. Yeah? So, for example, a few years ago, we came in contact with the polarity analysis by Heiner Frey, Bönninghausen method. And it showed that it was one of the best way to treat acute cases. It is fast, it is very reliable, and you get good results with it, and it's very easy to learn. So, yeah, you can go like a butterfly. You can go to every beautiful flower and just take the best, just take the nectar, and what doesn't taste good and doesn't work, just leave it. So what you need is you just be open and to try to give it a chance. Mm-hmm. And you will see children, they love it. Yeah. But when you stick to all, it should be done like Hahnemann does it, did it, and very strict and rigid, I think it won't work for you.
Uh-huh. So you need to have a bit of an open mind.
Some also have those ideas, oh, well, this is the color of, and then they start theorizing, and this is why, because this is chakra. And it's very practical. It's derived from cured cases. Yeah.
I love that. Well, you've definitely inspired me to start using this in clinic more. And I'm especially, like you said, with the cured cases, I'm really intrigued to go back and just check with them what they
say. And I only can say they're really treasure, and it's free. You know, you have access. Others, in other websites, you have to pay for it. Mm. It's still free. And what we are planning, or what we're working at the moment, Ulrich has this year, the clinic has its 40 anniversary now.
Wow.
Can you see it? When you, for example, you go to black, yeah, we have all these abbreviations here. And it's nearly impossible to know all them by heart. Mm. But when you go with the cursor over the remedies, yeah, then you get it full written.
Oh.
Graphitis or Grindelia robusta. And what we're working at the moment, when you get out a small essence of the remedy as well. So we want to include the materia medica in it. we're already working for it about 10 years. We get went through all our good cases and cases of colleagues and from journals to made this concise materia medica of it.
Oh, amazing. And it's going to be the same way you hover over the...
Yeah, you, the with short. Your cursor, when you stop over the... So here in gold, you go to analonium or silver, amazing. Argentum. Yeah. And when you hit your argentum nitricum, then you will see this fixed ideas, fear of heights, fear of examinations.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Yeah. Really but that's, great. I think we should take a bit of pee for that.
Definitely. I completely agree. And it's that energy exchange, right? There's so much work that's gone into that. And actually, this is something I talk about often with homeopaths, that they're too generous. You know, just as a profession, I think we're in, it's an energy. It needs to be an energy exchange. I was in a homeopathic group the other day and somebody asked about, they said something like, who's the richest homeopath? And I was really saddened by the responses because so many people said, oh, if you're a real homeopath, you don't make money. And I'm like, that's horrible. There's no other profession in the world where people would say, if you're a real doctor, you don't make money. Or if you're a real plumber, you don't make money. I don't know. If that plumber's not making money, it can't be very good. I wouldn't want that plumber doing my plumbing.
It has to do with that it's an immaterial way of healing.
Yeah.
And we're living in a complete materialistic world, which, but I think at the moment it's transforms. It will take a few more years, but more and more people recognize, especially what happened in the last 2-3 years, that there's something which is more important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you look at what is the development with all this artificial intelligence, and there's one movement which the technical side wants to take over everything. But what we have been shown in the last years, we need a physical interaction.
Yes.
We are humans. We are not machines. Yeah. A machine will never be able to give you empathy, a warm human contact. Yeah?
Absolutely.
And what you see now, that similar people, they connect through the internet, like we do now. This wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago. Yeah? So in a way, we can use these techniques, but in a good way. Yeah? You only do to anamnesis via internet now, via Zoom. But you can't examine the people, and you get so many good information from examinations.
Mm.
And it's, in a way, it's not the same. Yeah.
It's not the same.
When you're in a room,
Yeah, and especially because often you only see the person from the chest up, whereas a lot can be happening down, you know, like they can be tapping your desk. I have this one lady. Whenever she comes to my desk, to my clinic, she's always like trying to clean my desk, you know, like if she, I wouldn't have known that about her otherwise. And you don't see what they're doing with their hands or their body or even the full dress. Like how are they dressed and what are they doing?
The gestures are so important, and also the atmosphere.
I
remember a patient who did well on uranium nitricum, you know, actinide with nitricum quality. He had a very severe asthma. And the moment he came into the room, I felt like he had... pressed to the wall, there's no space for me left. Such a suffocating presence, you could feel this energy right away. And homeopathy is a lot about energy, which I use all your senses, not only the visual sense, which you see in the screen now. And you can sometimes you get information from the smell of their sweating or
Yeah, absolutely. Or even if there's like very strong perfume, or if there's just so much that you can pick up from somebody when you see them in person.
I just had the idea that sometimes you have patients, when they leave your room, the perfume stays inside or even. So I thought this may be a kind of animal energy to mark the territory, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. It's not confirmed yet, but.
Definitely. I think there's something in that.
Yeah.
I wonder, Marcus, do you have time for us to talk about your book on birds as well? Because bird remedies is something else that fascinates me. And if you have some time, I would love if you can talk to us a little bit about your book, Free as a Bird.
Well, it all started a few years ago. I had read the books which were available by Jonathan Shore, and I was fascinated, but I couldn't understand it with the patients. I didn't find the remedies because the problem is there are only a few represented in the repertory so far. Yeah, but then I had a patient with autoimmune disease, which I couldn't help. And then I went into, I asked to describe her. She had diffuse pains. One was like a very sharp stitching pain in her abdomen. And that was the starting point. It made her narrower and restricted. And from that on, more and more patients came and needed burn remedies. So the focus of the burn remedies is that they're in a life situation where they can't breathe properly anymore. When you just make this gesture, they are encaged like our lungs are encaged in the rib cage, and they want to be free. They want to be, just when you make this, you can feel how a bird patient feels. You can't move. It all gets tense here. You can't move, breathe problem when you make like that. It's like, And from that on, you can. And most of them have problems with their neck or their shoulders or. And I found out, for example, that the remedies from the crow family, the raven and the magpie and the carrion crows, they are good for inflammations of the shoulder, pericontritis, the shoulder, And I had a patient, she always made like that. There I have the pain, like a bird picking on there. And when you look when you look at the anatomy, we have a part of the shoulder blade where the tendon of the biceps muscle is inserted. And this part of this bony part of the shoulder blade, it's called raven beak.
Interesting.
Because it resembles, and she even made exact this gesture how this bone looks like. And I think at least 10 cases now from this crow family with some were even operated on the other side and it started on the lateral side. And which became better with remedies from one was, I think, jackdaw, one was carrion crow, one was raven.
Wow. I have to tell you, I've only prescribed raven once, and it was with a little boy who I was just tearing my hair out on what to give him. And the only thing that I could go on, because I was, sometimes when I've done a couple of prescriptions and it hasn't worked, then I just sit there and I'm like, okay, just empty mind, just what is the feeling that you get from this child? And it's only ever been video. They're on the other side of the country. But the boy, he talks either. And he's only 3 years old. And that is his normal way of speaking. And we have a lot of crows or ravens here. And they're always like, they sound is so annoying. And this little, 3 year old boy, that is the way that he talks. Like, literally, that's how he talks. So I'm like, I'm going to give you raven just because I don't let that is what you sound. I have no idea what to give. And you actually just reminded me, I need to go follow up with them and hear how they're going.
It's amazing. I think it was 6 years, 6 weeks ago, a lady, she's in her mid-70s, she came in with shoulder pains and she was talking like that. So you can imagine which kind of bird this has been.
Yeah, like a pigeon probably.
Yeah, exactly. She got pitched and it was gone the next day. It was really amazing.
So it's
sometimes a bit magic, but I'm still working on it.
So what are some words that clients will use or things that they will do that like a homeopath is not familiar with prescribing bird remedies? What are some clues that might alert them to the fact that maybe this is something from the bird kingdom? You've mentioned a few things, but what are some other words or gestures or pathologies that you might think of prescribing a bird remedy for?
A situation where they're feeling caged, or they're pressed down to the duties they have to do. Birds are airborne creatures. They are light built and they are airborne but earthbound. So if you take, for example, a very typical situation for the red-tailed hawk, for example, is that you have a husband who has a stroke and is paralyzed. And from now on, you have to look after him 24 hours, 7 days a week. And your own space is completely limited. You don't feel, so it's all about being narrow, no time for yourself, and you want to be free. And in red-tailed hawk, for example, in Buteo, Jamaica, Kansas, it's a situation that you have to look for a disabled or paralyzed partner. It is a common situation you find quite often.
Yeah, you actually make it with the client.
The birds, they have a higher metabolism than they have higher temperature. We have 37 degrees Celsius and birds have 40 degrees. So it's a kind of feverish hypothyroid stage with an inner vibration. You tense and let's say, for example, a colibri, the hummingbird, his pulse rate is over 400. We have 50. Yeah? Can you imagine? It's like, and that's what they described. You know, mostly they say vibrating. Mm-hmm. They can't calm down anymore. It's a constant tension, mostly with the neck, the chest, the constriction feeling, or the shoulders. Yeah. One female patient came in, she said, I have a lame wing. Yeah. They use specific language like wing or nest, or when my children fly away. Yeah.
Mm.
And you say birds are very good in orientation. And I often find bird remedies also for women in the climacteric period. When the children leave their house, go their own way, take their wings, and they lose the orientation. What should I do now? I spent my whole life to nurture them, to bring them up, and then there's an emptiness. Yeah?
Mm.
You know, birds, they follow the magnetic fields. They have a very good sense of orientation, and bird remedies can bring back the orientation in these women.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And like clearly it sounds like hyperthyroid type cases would probably do well on this.
Yeah, also. Can you think of it?
Mm.
Yeah.
And are you saying like maybe asthma cases as well with that trap that you were saying, like if expanding? Yeah. Interesting.
Problems with breathing. Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating. Is there anything else that you want to share about the bird remedies? And once again, I'm guessing people can buy the book from Narayana. Are there any other?
Actually, I'm working on a second edition because I have now material for a second book. But writing a book takes a lot of time. You can distinguish a bit the groups of birds. Yeah, the raptors, for example, they often make this gesture when they talk about their, that's how they, the claw feeling. Or they have sharp stitching pains. And the water birds, of course, they can have connection with water, with seas, or with the, So when you think of a bird remedy, ask them, is it more a singular bird or is it flying groups or is it more a small or bigger one? So it's still work in progress. We don't know. We have a few groovings, but over 100 remedies are available.
Wow. Over 100 bird remedies.
Are available, over 100.
No, it's that many. Wow. Actually, as we're talking, I'm just thinking our neighbor, we're on 16 acres here, and our neighbor is actually a parrot breeder. So she has got macaws, red-tailed cockatoos, any parrot you can think of. And I was just thinking to myself, because we have these beautiful red-tailed cockatoos here in Perth. They are just gorgeous. And I was thinking that would be such a great remedy. And instantaneously, I'm thinking, no more remedies. There's too many remedies already.
Yeah.
Just thinking, because what you would do is, I guess, get hold of a feather and just triturate that. Or how? Do you know how many of them are made? I know that often I think they sometimes use in trouble.
Most of the bed remedies are made from the feathers. Yeah. We did some triturations of ourselves. We did one of a fish eagle and one of the blue tit, which was very interesting. We are planning to do other. This autumn, the European Ubo, the biggest owl, we're planning to do it in September. And some are made of eggshells, some remedies.
Okay.
The raven is taken from the blood. Also, there was the white-bald sea eagle is made from the blood.
And when you triturated those, did you literally just put the feather in the trituration
the bowl? Yeah.
The milk from sugar the, and triturated?
Yeah. It was very strange. From the eagle, the feather was like that big. Yeah.
How would you fit?
We put a bit of the feather material and of the, But from the blue tit is a tiny little songbird, which only weighs 20 grams like an envelope. We took one feather, but it took 1 hour to triturate this tiny little, it was crazy. Yeah.
It's amazing. Oh, I'm too scared to, like, we have so many remedies already. And actually, once your brain starts going into that trituration phase, it becomes quite addictive. Hey, you just keep thinking, what's the next thing? What's the next thing?
Yeah. I think every homeopath should have done at least one trituration in his lifetime.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's a very deep experience.
Mm.
Yeah.
I agree.
And for example, the songbirds, they usually have a scene with singing, like the singing choirs or sing under the shower or, And one day, a lot of them have dreams of flying. Yeah? And once a female patient told me that she has dreams of flying, but she always flies in the night. So I thought, okay, maybe this is an owl.
An owl, yeah.
Should be a bird which flies in the night.
Amazing. Well, what can you tell us just a little bit about some of the themes of the owl?
They have a strong connection with owls. Yeah. One of the patients, he had asthma. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he even had a tattoo of an owl in his chest. Yeah.
Did you know that before you prescribed
the owl? The owl has, it's not completely clear with the owls now, but they have to do with wisdom. Yeah.
Yeah,
what is special with the owls is that their flight doesn't make any noise. Yeah. Usually when they flap their wings, the birds, then you can hear them. But with owls, you don't hear them. They don't make noise. Then they can't move their eyes. Yeah, their eyes are fixed. So when they want to look in the other, they always have to move their head, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But they can move their head very, just nearly 360 degrees.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And they have a very good hearing. Their whole plumage of the head is made to orient the sound. For example, the snow owls or other owls as well, they are capable to detect the mouse under the snow, which other birds, for example, the falcon, isn't possible. They cannot do it. Yeah.
Oh,
so they have all their specialities. Yeah.
This is definitely one of the parts that I love about homeopathy, because I love the natural world and I love learning about animals, plants, minerals, crystals, all of it. And I also love languages. So I love the Latin and where the words come from and the mythology and the, like, all these little bits that as a homeopath we have to learn about in order to understand the essence of a remedy. It just makes our job so much more fun, hey? And you just really fall in love with the world around you all over again. And then when you see that energy expressed in a client across the desk from you, then it's really beautiful.
Real life. You find it in films, you find it in stories, you find it in the nature, the energy. Mm. And they connect unconsciously with the energy which they like. And in a way, it's the same with the colors. If you connect with the color of the
resonance.
Well, color is a kind of a wave.
Yeah.
It's all about resonance in a way.
It really is. Actually, when you say it from that point, it completely is, because the colors, you know, they're just frequency, waves, energy, and it makes sense that you would vibrate with that particular energy.
Yeah. Just a few weeks ago, a colleague from Holland, St. Ulrich, and he wrote, he had a teenager with a goiter, so a swelling of the thyroid. And 14B she chose. It's a light violet.
Yeah.
Under there he found histaminum muriaticum. Yeah. And he gave it to her, and within 10 days the goiter was gone.
No.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Did he find that from the color, or was it a cured case and then he contributed?
No. He saw the colors and looked through the remedies which were in there and thought which would be best. Yeah.
Did you say
histamine? Muriaticum is, you know, histamine is a hormone which is severe allergic reactions, and it's a kind of a hectic energy. Yeah, they can't wait. They get angry when they have to wait, for example. Yeah, so it's a very restless energy. Yeah.
Which can be very thyroid-y anyway, that restlessness. Yeah. I've never heard of histamine.
So it's easier with smaller rubrics, yeah?
Mm.
When you, for example, when you start with this white, yellow, you only have three remedies in there, which is Azarum, Bufo, Sicorium, yeah? And Sicorium is, in a way, it's a bit like Zina and Chamomile, but in a more extensive way. And so when you have the story of a child with recurrent infections with high fever, which is very rebellious, and you hear the story that it is an unwanted child, unwanted pregnancy, even to the extent that the mother wanted to abort the child, then think of Sicorium, because it's a beautiful remedy. Yeah?
Wow. I will do that, because I actually, as you're saying that, I have a couple of cases of that. So I'll go and investigate that one. Holy moly, Marcus, I think you've opened up a whole new world for so many homeopaths listening to this episode. It's certainly, my mind is definitely blown. I was going to ask you about the client with the owl, that when you said about the tattoo, did you know about the tattoo before you prescribed the owl, or did you find that out afterwards?
No, he showed it to me afterwards.
Oh,
and he even told me that he did his master thesis about owls. Yeah.
Amazing. I had a client that prescribed the blue Morpho butterfly, and she was wearing a long sleeve t-shirt. And after I said that to her, she pulled up her sleeve and there was a blue butterfly tattoo on her arm.
Yeah.
She did amazing.
You had to be careful because
yeah,
it's only one symptom.
Yes.
And you need at least three that you can sit on a chair. You need at least three legs, as Herring said. Mm. So if one comes in with a beautiful teacher of a, let's say, a wolf on it.
Yeah.
It doesn't automatically mean that he needs luck.
Him.
Mm. Yeah. So don't be, if you, with the birds, when we come back to that, when you ask them if they want to transform in one of the birds, let's say 80 to 90%, they say, I want to be an eagle. Yeah. So you can be distracted very easily in the wrong way. Yeah.
Mm. Definitely.
When it fits, it's very nice, but it's, yeah. You should take it with care.
Definitely. Like I did with that Raven prescription I did. That one was completely, I sent her the remedy free of charge. I was like, just try this one out for me because this is me just grasping at straws. So I'm intrigued to go get back to her and see if she noticed any difference with that remedy. But that one was just, I didn't have much to go on in that. Marcus, you have completely blown our minds today. And I know so many homeopaths listening to this today are going to be in touch and start using this because it definitely resonates with me. I'm really excited to start using this. Like I said, this book's been sitting on my shelf for a while, but it will definitely get used now. And I definitely want to get your bird book as well, because as you were talking, I was thinking, oh, there's a few cases, especially I've got a lady who looked after her husband for many years and he's passed away now, but we're still stuck with that energy there. And I've used some remedies, but I haven't tried a bird remedy. So I'm really excited to try that with her. Is there any final message that you want to leave our listeners with? And apart from the homeo.de website, is there any other way that they can get hold of you and purchase your books? And are you still taking on clients? Just tell our listeners final message and how they can get hold of you and engage with you.
Yeah, it was through our website. There's the website homeo.de, and we still take clients. We make appointments from all over the world, be it Canada or wherever else. And when the books, you can buy at narayana.de. Well, I can write it down to you, or you can put it in the chat afterwards.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes.
And well, I think homeopathy is a lifelong learning process. You're never finished. And some people, they are overwhelmed by all this, by this amount of possibilities and remedies. But I think the main thing we should know is that we should stay open. Mm. If we don't know nothing, we may know everything. If we are like a blank paper, then everything will come to us. Mm. We just have to be open. And it's not so much a thing, it's try to get in contact with the heart, which is the energy. And that you then you can then find good remedies for your patients. And it's so rewarding when you see children, how they change within seconds, when you give the right remedy. Yeah. It's sometimes very that you can't pay for it. You can't give gold for it. Yeah. When you see how a diseased or distressed child or the interaction of child and the mother gets healed.
Mm. Yeah. It's beautiful. That's a beautiful message to leave us with. And I just want to say thank you once again for your time and sharing your knowledge with us. I am so excited to start cracking. All my clients are getting emails this weekend. All my cured cases are getting emails this weekend with a picture to tell them to choose a color.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so
much. Very nice to talk to you.
Dankeschön.
Bitte. Bye-bye.
Bye.